Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. And with me today, I have the crew that lovingly refers to themselves as the A-Team.
The height of arrogance, I guess.
A for arrogance. I hadn't put that together yet, but I should have. That voice you heard was John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm good. Been away for a while. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to hear your voice. And the trademark giggle that you heard belongs to Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm well. I'm fundamentally distracted by Lego at the moment, but otherwise doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing really well, and I understand your Lego distraction. Completely off topic, because I'm more than happy to jump down a rabbit hole for a minute. Lego announced the new ideas kits that will be produced for this year, and the first one is WALL-E, which is awesome because it was designed by one of the guys that worked on WALL-E.
Yes.
And then the other one is the Doctor Who and Companions kit. So this will be the very first Doctor Who kit that Lego has ever made.
It is a Lego set, yes.
Yes.
So that, and then we found out that also potentially on the list is a Goonies 30th anniversary kit of the pirate ship, which is terribly exciting when you're Kelly.
I think it's just cool all the way around. So
yes.
Yeah. It's no secret that I have this really big thing for Lego, isn't it?
It's no secret at all.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Anyhow, jumping out of the rabbit hole, we have a sponsor this week, and that is Casper Mattresses, and I'm pretty excited about that, just as I am excited about new Lego kits coming out. We'll talk about Casper in a few minutes, but first, how about a topic? And I was thinking what we could take a look at is this thing that you wrote, John, about what you are expecting or hoping to expect for Apple Watch as a user experience when we go to pick one up.
Yeah, you know, there's been several articles, one notable by Johnny Evans at Computer World, and a few others that are sort of putting a picture together of what the sales experience is going to be like. And, you know, anybody who's been watching Apple for a long time kind of knows how they think and what they want to try to achieve. And then I saw this article whose website I will not mention, an author I will not mention, that said, oh, Apple Watch is going to be cool, but oh, they're going to sell the darn thing. And I'm thinking, this is not helpful. So I backed up and I started thinking about what are Apple's goals for starters, and how is that going to affect how they sell it in the stores and the different channels through which they might sell it. And I started just kind of laying it out for my own sake, putting together the ideas of Johnny Evans and some others. There was a 9to5 Mac article that talked about Apple getting into the mode of understanding how to sell luxury items like watches. And, you know, so the first thought I had was that if you're going to figure out how you're going to sell this thing, you got to figure out how many you might sell, what you think the sales curve is going to look like. You might guess, for example, that there would be an initial surge and then there would be kind of a tapering off and a resting period, and then the word would get out and all these articles would be written and all these articles about Apple Pay and all the cool things you do, and then people get excited and then there's another upward surge of the S curve. So I wrote an article yesterday about if I were involved in the process. Actually, I was. I was a marketing manager at Apple, so I kind of know how they think. And I thought the first thing they want to do is make sure it's a booming success. So they're going to open the floodgates, let anybody come into the stores, let long lines form, let the media take pictures of people standing in line for the watch, you know, and see, kind of see how that goes for a while. And what the kind of gauge the attention and weigh that against how many they have in stock and decide, you know, where they're going to sell it first, maybe U.S. only. And then there's the buying experience. You know, you're not going to walk into the Apple store and encounter Dieter with a three-piece suit and steel glasses behind a plexiglass case, you know, saying, ah, so you want to see a watch, yes? And it pulls it out of the velvet case. No, I don't think so. So there's going to be some influence from Angela Ahrendts, maybe a redesign of a section of the store, or maybe part or all of the store. There's going to be a special place where you'll be able to talk to a friendly Apple salesman and ask questions and try one on. And there'll probably be some people who want to come in and just kind of be around the place and kind of ask questions. Some wise guys who don't want to do any homework and sort of, you know, bleed time. And so you've got the looky-loos, which I talked about. And I think there's some user education elements to it, too. You know, we haven't seen anything like this yet, but it wouldn't be unreasonable for Apple to start coming out with a lot of cool video tutorials and video ads that show you how it works. Maybe even an iPhone app that simulates the Apple Watch so that you can kind of play around with it and see how it works. So there's some education aspects. There's the weighing of the demand versus what they have in stock. There's the buying experience, and you're buying something that you're just not going to be a techie nerd about. You know, women are going to come in. They're going to try the small women's version on. They're going to say, "Honey, does this look good with my clothes? You know, or does it match my eyeglasses? You know." So there's going to be that kind of thinking.
Plenty of guys that are in there going, "Does this match my clothes? Does this match my eyeglasses?"
Yeah. So that's what I talked about yesterday, and it was kind of fun to kind of lay out the scenarios of metering demand, what Apple would do if demand got out of control, the buying experience itself, maybe some changes to the store.
So do you think we're going to be standing in really long lines and have a hard time getting a hold of Apple Watches?
I personally think there's going to be some long lines, annoying lines for about a week. And of course Apple has to sort of figure out how that's going to not interfere with the rest of the sales. Because if somebody wants to come in and buy an iPad Air 2, they're not interested in a watch, you want to be able to get some elbow room and come into the store, make their purchase and get out. So,
well, they've got that system already.
Yeah, they do.
We've seen that before with new phone launches.
Right.
Where, like, you know, "I'm just coming in for a case." Okay. Like, you know, they will sort of stop you at the door and ask you, like, what, you know,
you might
what
have
is
a
your
banker's,
business?
A banker's line outside the store where you get in line to play with a watch. And they'll be watching that really closely to see if that, you know, gets out of control. I surmise that at some point if the lines become too crazy and the stores become too crazy and they see a need for it, they might make you have an appointment first instead of coming in and just chatting and using up people's time. So that was the gist of the article.
All right. So it sounds to me like you're thinking the experience will be very similar to what we've had with iPhone launches, where it's very tightly controlled chaos.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
All right.
And there might be a pre-order option, too.
I was about to ask you about that, if you think Apple would do a pre-order. And I'm curious how a pre-order would work, because you can't try one on when you're doing a pre-order.
That's the whole thing, is trying out the different wristbands and which ones you like.
And which size watch is right for you. I know for a lot of people, they'll say, "Well, I just need the big one, and that's it." But I know there's a lot of people that will want to try them on and decide if they want the bigger face or the smaller face.
Well, I think that's something they might turn on if they don't get enough throughput. I mean, I've heard rumors that they'll have about between 2 and 3 million for sale. I mean, in the inventory ready for sale. So if they've got all these Apple Watches bursting for sale and there's a bottleneck in the stores where the excitement and the lines in the mall and everything are impacting Apple's ability to move them through, to have throughput, then Apple might order up online sales as well for people who think they already know what they want. And they can drop into the store maybe and try on a different band or something.
And what I'm hoping is that if Apple does pre-orders, that before pre-orders start, they'll have mock-ups in the store. So you can go in and try them on and then figure out what's the right size and what's the right style for you before you place your order online.
That would be very smart.
Yeah, because this isn't like a phone where it's just the phone and it is what it is and that's it. And your real choice is, well, do I want space gray or gold? And what color case do I want?
Yeah, and there's all going to be all these ergonomic issues. Like somebody will hastily decide on a wristband And then they'll try it for a couple of days, and then they'll realize they're still within the return limit, and they'll go, this band is digging into my wrist. I don't like it. So they'll be back in the store also, you know, in line. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff to work out. But the point is that I think Angela Ahrens and the team has a lot of experience with this, and I think they've thought of everything they could possibly think of. And I think it's going to go really, really well, better than this magazine or this website that I talked about suggested that, oh, Apple's in trouble. They don't know how to sell a watch. They're going to fail.
Well, it wouldn't be the same if we didn't have people saying Apple was about to fail. So, you know, we've got that.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this week.
Cool.
Yes, and that is Casper Mattresses. And I actually really love these guys because I'm sleeping better and my sleep patterns are improving. That's saying a lot for someone that's suffered from really bad insomnia for many, many years. And the reason I'm sleeping better is because their mattresses are very comfortable and offer me the kind of support that I need, which is not, you know, the kind of support where people are saying, "You're doing so good, Jeff." But the kind of support where I can actually feel comfortable while I'm sleeping in bed. One of the things that I love about their mattresses is that while they're very high quality, they don't have a price tag that matches that. They're surprisingly affordable. So instead of having to shell out, say, $1,500 for a mattress, you can get something for $800 or $900. And it will be just as good, if not better, than that $1,500 mattress that you would pick up at your local mattress store. The mattress I have, queen size, $850. And the reason they can keep these prices so low is because they don't have the overhead that goes along with having to have retail stores and the extra inventory for that. You order online, they ship your mattress to you in a box that uses Time Lord technology because the mattress is bigger than the box that it's contained in. And if you don't like it, which I would be very surprised at, not a problem. They'll take care of you and they'll take the mattress back. But I'm betting you wouldn't want to return it anyhow because they're that good. Even better, they're giving all of our listeners a $50 discount off of whatever mattress purchase they want to make. So to take advantage of that, you just need to go to casper.com/TDO and get $50 off, get yourself a better mattress, and start sleeping better right away. So thank you, Casper, for being our sponsor this week. And now the next topic that I wanted to hit, this is a piece you wrote up, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
This is about Outlook for iOS. Because for those of you that don't know, Microsoft just a few days ago rolled out a version of their Outlook email client for the iPhone.
Sort of.
Okay. That's an important thing. What do you mean by sort of?
Well, what happened was last year, Microsoft bought a company. And I don't know if the company is the same name as the app. And I'm sorry I didn't dig into this super deeply. But they bought the company behind this iOS app for mail called Accomply. I think it's Accomply. I'm not quite sure how to say it. They had this app. It was great. People loved it. And then Microsoft bought the company. We've seen it 100 times. But that has been rebranded and sort of Microsofted. I don't know how much of what is happening now is stuff that was already an issue with the original client, but there's a guy who is a mobile developer named Rene Winkelmeyer. He's a mobile developer for IBM, and he did a variety of big brain IT projects, you know, server deployments, that sort of thing, before he was a mobile developer at IBM. And he dug into this new Outlook app that came out that people were really excited about because most people use Outlook at work. And for a lot of people, particularly on the Windows side, Outlook works really well. If you have a Windows machine at work, being able to have Outlook everywhere is sort of nice. It was one of the things that was really exciting about Office 2011 when that came out on the Mac side was that they finally had Outlook instead of Entourage. So without getting too bogged down in email details, because I can tell you a lot more about this than anybody probably really wants to know, we're going to talk just about the mobile app. So it seems like it would be awesome that you can have Outlook on your phone, right? That seems like a great thing. And it would be, except that like I said, Renee Winkelmeyer started digging into it and found that Outlook, first of all, Outlook has these options where you can allow it access to Dropbox, Google Drive, and OneDrive, which sounds great, right? As a person who has personal use and you go, hey, you know, Outlook's kind of nifty, I'd like to use it. For you, that's not a big deal. For somebody who, for whom the mobile hardware is answerable to a corporation, a company of some sort, there's an IT department behind whatever you're doing, they look at that and they think it's a nightmare because there's no way to disable those features. And it means that if we're talking about secret company stuff, you can go stick it in Dropbox if you want to, or Google Drive or OneDrive. And at that point, it has left corporate control. There's nothing to say that I can't drop that in a folder that I share with Mr. Kelly, for example, and now he has access to a bunch of stuff he probably shouldn't be seeing, and on and on and on. So there's that's the first concern, which sounds, like I said, it sounds great if you're just people. But if you are an organization who's trying to deploy this in a responsible fashion, that's a terrible thing to have happen, particularly because there's no option on the back end. Like if you're deploying this out to your organization, there's no way to disable those features or control what they can connect to.
And now that really surprises me, considering how deeply entrenched Microsoft is in the corporate world.
Right.
You would think that would be something that they'd make sure is handled like immediately with version one releases.
Absolutely.
That surprised me too, Kelly, because one of the ways that Microsoft was beating up on Apple in the 1990s was checking all those corporate boxes. That was the buzzword, checking the corporate box.
Yeah. Which is why reading the article from Renee when he was writing up these things, reading this article was baffling to me, because basically what everyone has said about Microsoft forever is, you know, as soon as Apple really stepped out with the iPhone and with the iPad especially and started more or less wiping the Wall Street floor with Microsoft, you know, everybody said, well, the reason Microsoft makes any money is because of enterprise. And, you know, they're so entrenched. And so to continue reading this, it just got more and more baffling. For example, again, speaking of management, anything that's using Microsoft's ActiveSync technology, which is how you get stuff, you know, sort of get email, you know, if you're using an Exchange server and these sorts of things, there's a few different corporate setups that use ActiveSync. It's something Microsoft built, but other companies can deploy if they wish. And normally, ActiveSync has its own unique identifier for each device that it's connecting to. So if you're an IT person and you generally have, you know, two or three different machines that you're using, that you yourself are using for different things, each of those would have its own Active ID or ActiveSync ID. So if I need to go, you know, pull one off the server for some reason, there's a way for me to tell which machine is the one that I need to get rid of. And the Outlook client doesn't do that. So if you have an iPhone and an iPad and you install it on both of them, it's the same ActiveSync ID, which is just insanity to me, because I've been a person who had to manage those devices. And so as soon as somebody tells me that this is how this works, I'm just going to start hitting my head against my desk and be very sad, because it seemed like this was going to be a great thing. And then that is a terrible solution, because it's not a solution at all, particularly in an IT department.
Kelly, it makes me think of sports. A really strong opponent will make you make second guess yourself and create unforced errors that you wouldn't have normally created against a weaker opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this is part of Microsoft's feeling like they're, you know, really under the gun against Apple and they're making unforced errors.
See, I want to think that, but then at the same time, like, it took them this long to come out with Outlook for iOS. Why didn't some of these, what seemed to me to be very large details, end up being correct? Another interesting thing about this is he did some testing and discovered that with his devices in airplane mode, which means the radios are supposed to be off and they're not supposed to be receiving anything, he tried to send an email and it managed to go anyway. Mm. He received a notification about the email, which should not have happened. And it's because there's an intermediary, and that intermediary is Microsoft. Microsoft is storing credentials and server information without – notifying somebody that, that they're requesting that and keeping it. So every message that you send or receive using Outlook is going through some sort of Microsoft servers, even if it's in the same email domain. So, my email address,
the way BlackBerry mail works.
Yes. So my email address at MacObserver.com, emailing Jeff, Jeff's email address at MacObserver.com should, in theory, should never leave the network, MacObserver.com. And if I was using Outlook, it would go from MacObserver out to Microsoft and then back to MacObserver and then to Jeff.
Kelly, I was more intrigued by your airplane mode. Are you saying that a message burst through that restriction and was transmitted anyway? Did I hear you right?
Well, I want to make sure I've got the right information. Let me pull this up really quick and see, because he was talking about how I got a push notification that I about an email and I didn't think it
might have gone into the outbox and not yet transmitted.
He said, I stopped the app. I sent myself from another account a test message and immediately received a push notification about the new mail. Either Microsoft was doing Magic OS, iOS stuff I'm not aware of, or they're using a central service to monitor my account. I put all my devices in airplane mode so there could be no communication. I opened the access log of my Apache server, and there it was. And it's showing Microsoft server active sync with a user and a device ID with a device type of Outlook. A frequent scanning from an IP to my mail account means Microsoft stores my personal credentials and server data. They haven't asked me. They just scan. So they have, in theory, full access to my personal information manager data.
And it also sounds like, in some way, they may be sidestepping the settings for airplane mode.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting. All right. Well, I'm curious to see how this all plays out, because while I'm sure Outlook for many people on iOS is going to be a great thing,
mm-hmm.
which you've described to me, just the couple things you've described, makes it a showstopper, at least for me. So
well,
I
and it's a,
installing it.
And it's a showstopper for a lot of people who are in organizations. You know, there's so much BYOD. You know, bring your own device. Like, it's fine if you don't want a company phone, but if you want your work stuff on your own iPhone or your own Android device or things like that, like, that's a huge movement in enterprise IT. So, you know, how much you get to control any of that is sort of up for debate. But if you're going to try to install something specifically for work mail, at least in this case, you're much better off looking at another solution, whether it's making people load a web page that's, you know, Outlook Webmail, Outlook Web Services, or whether it's going with Good for Enterprise or something like that. Like, there are other corporate mail solutions out there. And sadly, the one from Microsoft that you'd think would be the one you'd want to use is probably not it.
Amazing.
Wow. Wow. Hey, we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So if you hear more about what's going on with Outlook, let me know, Kelly, so that we can revisit this and let our listeners know as well. Because
certainly,
I'm sure many of them are curious to see how this plays out.
Right. And like I said, for people, this is probably a fine solution. If you are an IT person, this is going to give you many headaches.
Yeah, kind of sounds like it. All right. And thank you to Casper for being our sponsor this week.
Yay.
Yeah. Head over to casper.com/TDO. Get yourself $50 off a mattress, and which to me sounds like a really great deal, because not everyone can sleep in my bed with me. So you might as well get your own and sleep well, too. And thanks, John. Thanks, Kelly, for joining me today. And we will see everyone else again tomorrow.
Later, wizard.
Toodaloo, guru.